Directions Magazine. This is Directions on the News for Tuesday, January 21st, 2014. This weekly podcast gives you an inside edge on technology news related to all things location. This is Joe Francica, Editor-in-Chief in Huntsville, Alabama.
And this is Adina Schutzberg, Executive Editor in Somerville, Massachusetts.
The first month of 2014 has brought the Internet of Things into plain sight, from connected cars to the industrial Internet. It's where big iron meets big data. Where will location technology be critical as we connect everything to the Internet, from toasters to turbines? We'll discuss that and more, but first a word from our sponsor.
Directions Magazine is pleased to invite you to the 2014 Location Intelligence Conference, May 19th through the 21st, at the Walter E. Washington Convention Center in Washington, D.C. This is the 10th year of the event, which now includes the technology summits for users of Oracle Spatial, HERE, a Nokia business unit, and the Eclipse Foundation's Location Tech Working Group. This multi-track event is an excellent opportunity to network with colleagues on location analytics, open source technology, mobile location services, and geospatial big data. More information can be found at www.locationintelligence.net.
Adina, first I want to start off with a quote, and this is from Ericsson's CEO, Hans Vestberg. He estimated that for every $10 that's shaved off the price of a smartphone, 100 million more people can buy them. This year, we could see 1 billion smartphones sold. The relentless pursuit of driving down all the costs of smartphones has had a side benefit. The components inside them have gotten cheaper and smaller at astounding speeds. Even think about the larger social problem. In the coming decades, billions of people will be moving into cities. Can we use connected sensors to control traffic, the utilities of cities, or a host of other infrastructure fixes to ensure our cities don't choke under this mass migration? So that's where we're going to start today's discussion, because the movement of goods and services and people and cars, etc., will I think directly impact how we in the geospatial technology sector act. The question is how much geospatial technology and information will be simply embedded and expected as a means of efficiently and effectively driving this Internet of Things. We seem just to be in this age of the Internet of Everything, and we talked about it last week when we discussed some of the things that were going on at the Consumer Electronics Show, and it just seems like the products that have hit the market within the last year or two have finally reached this critical mass such that the mainstream media is taking notice. And I think we in tech have recognized that it was coming, but now some rather big moves are being made by companies like Google and Apple that will make the average consumer aware of the possibilities. So Google buys Nest last week, a company that has a smart meter on steroids, a thermostat that learns your daily behavior so that it can adjust the temperature of your house. Google also started something called the Open Automotive Alliance, ostensibly to introduce the Android operating system into vehicles. And Apple has had, for at least the last 6 months or so, been promoting Siri for eyes free. That means issuing commands to the vehicle without touching the phone itself. So we have this activity in the connected car, the connected home, and the connected industry. And where the connected industry comes in is this thing that General Electric is popularizing, something they call the industrial Internet. So for a company that makes jet engines and electrical turbines, they see it as a way to connect this big data to big iron. So for example, they want to build information systems to glean intelligence from large volumes of industrial data and analyze it for competitive advantage. So all these things we have, the home, the car, the industry, let's just start quickly with the connected home, because this was a huge acquisition by Google in buying Nest for $3.2 billion. Google has built nearly its entire business on the unmatched ability to wring value out of the Internet. So let's just take that one example, Adina, and where do you think geo plays into this connected home concept?
I wanted to start out by saying that geo is just inherently embedded in all of this. right? It's a given. You're going to know where the turbine is. You're going to know where the car is. You're going to know where the sensor is in your house that's sensing whether there is light or motion or humidity or the temperature or whatever, right? So that's it's in there. It's like, you know, that Prego commercial, right? It's built right in. What becomes interesting with Google's acquisition of Nest, and Nest being a home automation device, is that now Google's getting information about what's going on in your house. So it really becomes yet another piece of information, something about a topic that you're very passionate about, and that's this whole indoor positioning, indoor location information, part of the Internet of Things and the Internet of People. Now, what I don't think people fully grasp is that right now Nest is a pretty simple little animal, right? It's got only a handful of sensors. You put a sensor only in one room.
Right.
So right now, the information that potentially Google, should it tap Next for all the data, it doesn't really know that much. But what if we could put a sensor in every room? And what if that sensor could listen to what's going on in the room? Or count how many people are in the room, or even get a sense of what they're doing. Are they working out, or are they playing the clarinet, or are they sleeping, right? That's the kind of stuff that becomes very interesting and then can feed back to all kinds of uses for Google, which, of course, is really an advertising company. Because if we know all that stuff about you, what you're doing, when, in what room, we can really target those ads. So, of course, this being, you know, a football time of year, so if the sensor should sense that you are sitting there watching the Super Bowl, right, because it can listen and hear what you're listening to, and it knows there's four or five people in there, it can detect the temperature, it can detect whether or not maybe there's hot food already there, maybe the pizza coupon comes in and says, hey, click right here and we'll deliver you a hot pizza in 4 minutes.
So it really almost sounds like it is a play, obviously, for search, right? They're collecting data. It's going to make ads more relevant to that individual. It's collecting things on your activity. But one of the writers of the articles that we'll put in the show notes noted that the last couple of acquisitions of Google have been devices. And so the ability to, again, connect data to the device, or the device to the data collection, is where Google is headed. So everything that they're doing with the connected car, the acquisition of Nest, is essentially sampling, right? It's taking the data, it's getting these bits and bytes of data and collecting them for its ultimate adventure in search and making more relevant advertising to you. It's almost becoming the Nielsen of today, right? So whereas we used to collect consumer behavior by surveying people, Google's doing that for you, and it's going to do it through devices that they insert into the home.
I think that analogy is absolutely perfect. And the tricky part, and what the concern is that Google is eventually going to tap into all of these different sensors in your car, in your phone, on your walls, that are smelling and listening and sensing how warm the room is. And they're going to bring that stuff all together for this amazing database. And the challenge right now, and this happens every time we try to do this, right, is we don't have standards so that all this data can come together and be used. Because if you think about it, and this, as I was looking over the information about the Internet of Things and sort of where Google's going, this is, I mean, if I think back, what is it now, 15 years for SensorWeb, which is a sort of a generic name for standards that OGC and others were working on, this idea that you could put sensors out there, and if they all spoke to one another using a standard sort of method, you could find sensors and you as a scientist could bring together all this data and do your analysis. All the Internet of Things is all those sensors, but now instead of all that information coming to a scientist to analyze it, all that data is being transferred between the machines.
Right. And so the machines will have some sort of artificial intelligence, some sort of natural learning of the activity of the interaction between the sensors.
Kind of like what Nest is a little baby version of that, right?
Right. And you can essentially play that out down the road, right? Essentially, you know, literally down the road when you have the connected cars. And the cars will communicate with the sidewalks and the buildings. And there will be things that will adjust on the fly.
Right,
you'll
the street
see
lights.
Street lights will go on. Exactly, right.
And the stoplights, for that matter. Right. Oh,
right.
An ambulance. This already exists at some level, but we could certainly enhance this more. Oh, the ambulance is coming, right? So the lights change. Maybe, and this would be wonderful. What if the other cars on the road get some indication that the ambulance is coming and have a little bit more time to pull over?
Well, and that really was going to go right to the next topic, you know, that the connected car and what Apple and Google are doing, the Open Automotive Alliance. If all they are doing is essentially delivering the operating system to the cars, what they're essentially promoting is the fact that the dashboard in the car is nothing more than an interface for the smart devices, your iPhone or your Android, right? So that's just the way you're going to connect with the dashboard, and that information will come down the pike to you and it'll be displayed, you know, from that connectivity between the phone and the dashboard of your car. So, you know, all of this is playing in together, and that type of advanced warning and communication is going to be right through probably a Google or an Apple device.
Yeah, and the thing that's interesting about the car is, unlike the in-home automation where information comes from your phone that says, I'm 10 minutes away, you know, turn on the stove and heat up my dinner. I'm making that up,
right,
but that,
right.
I believe you can do that now. What's going to happen in the car is the information is going to come. Right now, we're still driving our car, so the information will come in, and you will actually have to pull the car over to get out of the way of the ambulance. Of course, spinning it forward, the car will just automatically get out of the way because it will be a self-driving car.
Well, that would certainly help down in my neck of the woods where there are so many cars that look at the ambulance coming toward them and go, oh, look, an ambulance, and never get out of the way, and it drives me nuts.
Well, and our problem here is in Cambridge and other sort of the congested parts of my city here of Boston, is there's nowhere to go.
Yeah.
Right. You want to get out of the way, but you don't know how or where, and even some help with that would be helpful. I'm going to, you know, take you off your current route, and I'll put you back on your route later so you can get out of the way of the ambulance.
Yeah.
That, I think, would help people move along. But again, we're back at this challenge of all this data coming in, and we need a standard way for it to communicate. We need a single platform, right? So what GigaOm is suggesting about Google's move into the connected car is what it's really bringing to the table is a unified platform, right? So we'll all use Android, so that'll help everything speak together better. And what Google will bring to the table is its developer community, right? So,
right.
So all this data will be out there, and they will figure out how to make the apps and make the interesting things and make some money off of pulling all this data together and making a better experience in the car.
I'm intrigued by this concept that GE has put out there called the Industrial Internet. I think it just seems like that is where a lot of the cost savings will be driven with car manufacturing for efficiencies at airports. So I'm going to read from a New York Times article back in October 9, 2013. And I quote, "The so-called industrial internet involves putting different kinds of sensors, sometimes by the thousands, in machines and the places they work, then remotely monitoring performance to maximize profitability. GE, one of the world's biggest makers of equipment for power generation, aviation, healthcare, and oil and gas extraction, has been one of its biggest promoters. GE also announced partnerships with Cisco, AT&T, and Intel as part of Wednesday's announcement, being back in October. The company already has engagements with Accenture and Amazon's big cloud computing service. It is also an investor in Pivotal, a company building industrial internet applications." They just touched every big industry in the world. And if they're going to start connecting aviation to healthcare to oil and gas, you can dream of the possibilities of what that may be, putting aside the fact that GE could corner the market in some of this stuff. But it is an interesting concept, and they do touch so many big industries.
Yeah, and that is interesting to think about. So I just said that Nest is sort of the baby version of what the Internet of Things might look like in our lives. Well, I think that there's also perhaps an analogy between the smart grid being sort of the junior version of this industrial internet that you just talked about.
Mm, yeah.
The return on investment on the smart grid, all told, looks really good. I mean, if we're smart and we use energy, you know, we wash our clothes at night when electricity is cheaper and all that stuff, because we can get all of this information to decide when the time is ripe, if you can then expand that out to the guys making the energy, right, and all these other things, yes, the returns are potentially huge, and the savings, and you know, the savings to the environment, to safety. There's so many other places that this will have an impact on our world.
Well, and that's one of the things that I think we're circumventing a little bit, is that information that's coming back to the consumer, coming back to us, essentially the big data analysis, doesn't quite reach us yet. I don't know when to turn on my washing machine to get low off-peak rates. You know, I don't know when to buy an airline ticket, because I know that the rates are falling down. That's not a great example, but the ability to have a sensor in my home and then tell me what's the best rate to, you know, operate my machine isn't quite there yet.
No, but it's so close.
Yeah, it does seem like it's close.
It is so close. Because, and again, the pieces are collecting the data from the right sources, getting the right algorithm, right, and then having it affect something, whether it's you know, some buzzer goes off and says, hey, Joe, time to put on the washer, or better yet, the clothes are already in the washer, it just turns it on.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's sort of where we're at. We've got all the data. We've got the actuators. We've got the sensors. It's the putting them together in meaningful ways part, and that's why this is so exciting, because we're just on the brink of it.
So let's go back to our original question. Where does GEO play into that? Is it sensor web enablement? Is it the standards we're putting out that could facilitate this more? I don't know if we're playing the role that we could be playing in this Internet of Things.
Well, I think we're, as I said before, I think we're already embedded in it, because this is all built around sensors, right?
Mm.
And if you've got a sensor, it's
already location enabled.
There you go.
Words.
It already is. And if it's on a phone, then and the phone is moving around, then it knows where it is because there's a GPS on the phone, right? So I think that's already built in. Where I think we play the most interesting role and the most valuable role is in the preparation of those models that collect the data and do that decision making, right? Isn't that what GI is? It's sort of the predictive analysis part.
Yeah, exactly. At least in one of the articles I read, they pointed out very specifically, it was so important for Apple to get the maps right, because that's going to be the foundation of anything going on in the car. If you don't have those maps right, you're not going to drive effectiveness and consumer confidence if those maps aren't right. Well, that's all the time we have for today. From us here at Directions Magazine, we'd like to remind you that January 31st is the cutoff date for our open call for presentations at our Location Intelligence 2014 event. That is also the user summits for Oracle, HERE, and the Eclipse Foundation's Location Tech Working Group. Find more information about submitting a presentation or to sponsor at locationintelligence.net. If you'd like to comment about today's podcast, you can write to us at editors@directionsmag.com, send us a tweet @directionsmag, or leave a comment where this podcast is posted. Thanks again for joining us today, and be sure to tell a friend.